Welcome to the INSS podcast series. The past year has been a year of mixed trends all over the world. On the one hand, the vaccines, and on the other hand, the continued spread of the corona pandemic, signs that managed to inspire hope and optimism, along with worrying signs, trends of continuity, along with change. All of these are especially evident here in Israel. So to summarize the past year, and at the beginning of a new Jewish year, we are happy to host in this program the head of the Institute, Professor Manuel Trachtenberg.
Shalom.
So let's talk first about Israel and the environment. When we look at the processes that are taking place around us, what are the signs of hope and new opportunities? And what are the worrying signs that have arisen in the past year?
Well, you know, the Middle East, it's a never-ending source of surprises and action. We are all under the strong impression of the withdrawal of the U.S. from Afghanistan and the takeover of the Taliban that happened much faster than expected. And we should remember that what brought about this takeover is a long process of confrontation between the West, if you wish, the U.S., with the jihadists that populate the area. But that's not the only source of tensions in the Middle East. There is, of course, Iran always looming large, particularly after the new regime that was elected recently. Much more radical and tougher than the previous one, if that's possible. and the instability in Lebanon, the economic collapse there, the fact that Syria remains divided and in a kind of a slow motion civil war with lots of hands operating there from Russia to Iran, to the Kurds and Turkey and so forth and so on. It's a very complicated puzzle, but within picture that is not so hopeful, there are signs of hope. And one of them is the fact that the Abraham Accords that were signed last year, actually we are commemorating 1 year of the signing of the accords with the both in the states in the Persian Gulf and Sudan and Morocco, that those accords constitute, in my view, a suitable platform to try to push forward with an axis of moderate Arab states that will include not only those countries, but also Jordan, Egypt, and hopefully also the Palestinian Authority, with Israel as a pivot in that axis. And that grouping of countries have common issues to face, not only the common threat from Iran that looms large, but also in the field of energy, water, the economy, confronting the pandemic and so forth. We have common grounds, common interests, also confronting terror that is a threat for all of us. And so we should try to foster that axis. And as I said, to include also the Palestinian Authority, and so not push the accords as a way of bypassing the Palestinian, but rather as in order to include them as well. So that's one hopeful track that we could follow, but there are others as well.
What are the lessons that we can learn from the process of, I would say, moving out forces from the region of the United States, not only in Afghanistan? We have seen similar processes in other places. And what can Israel do to strengthen its position vis-a-vis Iran in this period of a crisis, an international crisis with Iran?
Right. So that the withdrawal of the U.S. from Afghanistan was a foregone conclusion. I mean, it came as no surprise. The question always, almost always with withdrawals, is why it took so long and why it happened so fast when it happened. And I'm not underestimating the horror of the scenes that we have seen, but that withdrawal, as I said, was imminent. It had to happen. The United States couldn't prolong its stay in Afghanistan, and we have to understand that. Now, it's part of a longer trend of essentially the United States not really withdrawing, but lessening its active presence in the Middle East for two main reasons. One is that the United States is self-sufficient in terms of energy. So the oil of the Middle East that was such a strategic asset lost its relevance for the United States. And the second one is that the United States is concentrated in its efforts and its attention in the growing confrontation with China. And that's going to dominate that confrontation, the entire geopolitical arena. We have to understand that Israel finds itself in a peculiar position in that respect, because we are a strong and intimate ally of the United States on the one hand, but on the other hand, we don't want this area to evolve into an arena for a new Cold War vis-a-vis China. So, it's a peculiar situation, but we have to understand that. Now, with respect to Iran, you ask, and the United States and so forth. In my view, Israel has to act in a dual track strategy. One is to develop a very intimate relationship with the U.S., with the Biden administration, with respect to Iran. We share, and the president said that in the recent meeting with our Prime Minister Bennett, the president said the United States is not going to allow a nuclear Iran, not now and not ever. That's a very strong statement. We have to connect to that statement and work together in discrete ways to foster that strong understanding and action that stems from it. The second track is that we need to invest, regrettable, but we need to do that, a credible military option vis-a-vis Iran to prevent Iran from reaching the nuclear weapon. And we have to do that, again, in collaboration with the U.S. What does it mean? It's open to interpretation. There are many different ways of doing that. And hopefully, to try to also gather the support of European states in that move. So, strengthen the relations with the U.S., the bipartisan, traditional relations that we always had in the past with the U.S., and do it in a very careful, discreet way.
Let's go back to Israeli internal issues, and the Institute's work in the last year. How does it adapted? How did it adapt its work to the challenges faced by the new government in Israel, and what is its mission in this context, in your view?
Right. So, we have a new government. I mean, has been there only 3 months, we have to understand that this new government came after a very long period of political turmoil, instability in Israel, and so the new government is faced with a backlog of issues and problems that landed on it the day it took over, and we didn't have a budget passed in Israel for since the last time that the government in Israel passed a budget was in March of 2018. So it's a very long time. So you have a government that lands into this political, with this backlog of problems, and you have many of the ministers that are new to the areas where that were assigned to them, and new to the administration. Okay, they have no previous experience. So, you know, they are forced to confront the here and now, the pressing issues. They don't have the time, the energy, the presence of mind to deal with the deep, long-standing issues. So we at the Institute, we have, I think we have the duty to do the hard thinking that it's needed to confront the outstanding problems of Israel and provide that advice and that deep thinking to the government, because, you know, in the end, it's one country. We need to do the best to solve our issues, and we have a mission. And the mission is to do that, to do the deeper thinking, the strategic thinking that the government and the government officials cannot do because of what I described before.
And about the work of this think tank, I would like to ask you more. If you can explain, how does the foundations of national security, which is a multidimensional concept, are examined, are analyzed through the work of this institute and according to your vision of what should be examined more than the basics of what is so-called national security? What is the importance of soft power, for example? And how does the social dimension of security incorporates into the work of this institute?
Right, so national security should be a dynamic concept that reflects the changing realities in which Israel operates. We have seen instances of that in the last confrontation with Gaza, when in our mixed cities, we saw the eruption of a violent conflict between the Arab population and the Jewish population. That's just one instance of the linkage, but it goes beyond that. I think that the way I would like the Institute to proceed in terms of the research, its activities, its outreach, is to stand on two legs. One is dealing with what I would refer to as hard power, which is, that is to say, the military power, the military or the security doctrine, the way the army operates, cyber, the future of the battlefield, and so forth and so on. The second leg is what goes under the rubric of soft power. What I mean by that is diplomacy, is including, of course, negotiations, accords, including climate change, including economic issues, water, energy, and so forth and so on. We need to expand the toolkit of policy. National security that does not rest only on hard power. In fact, when you don't have the second leg, that limits the possibility of activating hard power. And we have seen that repeatedly with respect to Gaza. Whenever we consider taking action in Gaza, we are restrained in many ways or limited by the reaction of the international community vis-a-vis Israel. Now, of course, that reaction will happen, but the extent of which depends on how you act upon it. We have a big problem in translating our military achievements into changes in perceptions. And the last confrontation with Gaza is the best example of that. Mm-hmm. We did achieve good, and in some cases, very good results in the military front. But the other side claimed victory in many ways, and the perceptions, not only of them, but the wider perception was that, well, you know, it was a repeat game and it's not clear what happened in it. So you need to be capable of activating the two legs of power. And we have not been as good in Israel in general in doing that. And in the Institute, we need to devote more attention to balancing the two legs.
And with respect to the operation, the Guardian of the Walls, have we seen anything new that should actually call our attention toward other aspects of national security that we should concentrate on?
So first of all, the very fact that we had yet another round of confrontation, of inconclusive confrontation with Gaza, with the Hamas, is a symptom that that we don't have a clear strategy with respect to Gaza. The strategy cannot be to have every so often yet another inconclusive confrontation, and in between to have the our population around Gaza suffer from the constant harassment from the Hamas in many ways, be it the balloons that provoke fires or whatever. Can't be. That's not a viable, reasonable strategy. So it's a reminder that we don't have a strategy to deal effectively with Gaza, and we should develop that. That's point A. Point B, Gaza exemplified the limits of how much you can do military just by hitting them from afar and not having boots on the ground. I'm not advocating the use of boots on the ground. What I'm saying is that it was a further example or case that brought home the limitations of just hitting from far away. The next point that is important to take from the confrontation is that it's very hard to compartmentalize the different fronts. Okay, so the internal front in Israel erupted as well, and that's something that we have to take into consideration. And the last point is that if we consider whatever may happen in the north, if something happens with the Hezbollah, is that the possibility of massive missile attacks on Israel, on the entire country, is something that is very worrisome. We have extraordinary technological capabilities with Iron Dome and others, but we understand well that that's not a hermetic, it cannot be, and therefore it poses serious question marks about how we are going to proceed if something like that happens.
And finally, about the corona, what did we learn about life alongside the corona? What reality does one have to adapt to? And what are the lessons from dealing with the global epidemic so far? And what can be learned more about dealing with other external disturbances to the routine of life, such as climate changes?
So there are several lessons. One of them, for me, in my view, the corona was a wake-up call in terms of this type of dangers that are about to affect humanity in a big way. So corona is one type, right? The pandemic, there is climate change and in all its manifestations, there is the issue of water, there is the need to change the way we relate to the energy production and so forth. These issues are transnational, are global. You cannot escape them, right? I mean, Australia and New Zealand try to isolate themselves completely. That's not sustainable, okay? That's point A. Point B, when we concentrate, we, the humanity concentrates efforts, you can reach results. The fact that a vaccine, and not just one, but quite a few, were developed in such extraordinary speed says that we have the capability of tackling these huge issues, these huge threats with the might of our scientific and technological capabilities. But we need to focus, concentrate efforts. Point C is that because these big hits that we're subjected to are not of the kind that you can defeat them conclusively in one shot, but are here to stay. Because of that, it requires management. It requires a continuous process of assessment, research, assessment, communication, decision making, and managing the entire scene. In Israel, we are very good at improvisation. We are very good at, we are very resourceful, but we are not good at long-term management. And we need to develop that capability because this is here to stay. And if it's not the COVID, it will be something else. As I said, the threat from massive incoming missiles or a earthquake that, this area is prone to it or whatever. So we need to develop those capabilities, these management capabilities. And we need also to understand that in the end, it's individual behavior that counts. You cannot impose responsibility. We today is the first day of classes in Israel, okay? Mm-hmm. And there's been a huge debate about what to do about it, whether to do it, to start classes or not, where to impose vaccination, where to impose masks and so forth and so on. And the discussion is oftentimes in terms of what to impose, what to decree, rather than recommend. And in Israel, we tend too much to go to the formal aspects of the measures, impose it, control and so forth and so on. What about personal responsibility? So we need to change. As with climate change, we need to change what we consume, how we consume, what we eat, and so forth and so on. So it's in two areas of management on the one hand, and instilling a sense of personal responsibility that we need to act. We can do it. I think that Israel, because we are so resourceful and inventive, we can deploy those capabilities to contribute to these global issues.
And this sums up our discussion. So I would like to thank you and wish you a happy new year. Shana Tova.
Thank you. And let me wish to ourselves, the Institute, that we will be able to fulfill our important national mission of providing in-depth research and advice and policies and strategies to Israel, to the government, to society in general. I think we should consider ourselves very lucky that we are here in the Institute in that position, that we can do that. It's, I think, a part of being a Zionist in the 21st century is contributing in that sense. And I want to wish to everybody associated with the Institute, our friends, our donors, our readers, our supporters, our collaborators, and of course to our workers, a fruitful, peaceful, and healthy year.
And thank you for viewing and listening. Happy New Year, Shana Tova from all of us.
Shana Tova.